We're talking with John Greenwald, who created the Black Vault. You can find it at blackvault.com. It's got an amazing 1.5 million pages of material. I'm wondering if there's anyone in the country or in the world who has filed more FOIA requests than my guest tonight. I would have to say no. It'd be interesting to find out from him in the next segment to how many he has outstanding at any given time, whether there are any agencies he has not covered. And about some of the other material we can find on his site, in addition to this new cache of Project Blue Book documents. We'll be right back. John, I mentioned before the break about the Smithsonian. Is there anything in those documents that shed light on that institute's interest in the topic?
Yeah, and what was neat about the collection that Rob had had found is that there were these just kind of random folders that had different headings, one of which was Smithsonian. And the backstory behind this was the correspondence between the Department of Air Force and Project Blue Book and the Smithsonian Institute. And they were inquiring with the Smithsonian about one of their cameras that they had there that they used to track stars and planets and so on. And so what they did was they reached out just to kind of see what they could find out of what was called the Becker Nunn camera, I believe is how it's pronounced, and to see if they could actually track UFOs because they would be able to really track things from about 100 to 600 miles high, according to the specs on this camera. And so what they did was they reached out, and the Smithsonian, responded and said, in essence, no, that they weren't able to do any new projects with UFOs, but no one at the Smithsonian had ever seen a UFO during the course of using that camera and the different projects. But it kind of showed that the Blue Book staff were kind of reaching out to places like the Smithsonian to see what they could kind of find out with what the capabilities are on tracking UFOs.
Well, that's
There
almost
were
encouraging on their part, you know?
yeah, you're absolutely right. In their defense, even though I'm critical on Blue Book, there were those types of gems that kind of showed that they were being proactive on reaching out, seeing what they could find out about possibly tracking or viewing UFOs. That what was also kind of again a testament to maybe they did do some of their due diligence on UFOs was they had quite a library of books there at their disposal that they collected, a lot that were around the time frame of the Project Blue Book era. And so Lieutenant Murano had actually taken a lot of those books with him because, again, they were just going to burn them or trash them. And so Rob had scanned in some of the books that they used as reference. A lot of stuff on space physics, satellites, comets, again, all that reference material that aided them in figuring out what some of these cases were. But also flying saucer books as well, that you'll see quite a few different books in there. So
I love the clipping archive, the cartoons and comics. It shows you that somebody put a lot of time into just clipping little bits out of newspapers.
that's right. Yeah, and that was a rather humorous a batch of documents, just because they did collect them, not only because they're comics, but I mean the fact that they collected them and had a little bit of a sense of humor behind them. And there's quite a few that are in there. One thing too that I want to make sure that we mention, away from some of the clippings, are the photographs. And I was absolutely, as somebody who loves this topic, was absolutely amazed at the quality of the photographs that Rob had sent over to me. And when Lieutenant Murano had, given the stuff over to Rob, there were binders of the original photographs. Now, the reason why I bring this up is because largely what we see with Project Blue Book are like literally 20th generation photocopies, photocopy of a photocopy of a photocopy. And it makes it for a research from a research angle, it just makes it impossible to see, what really were they investigating. And what Rob had uncovered in these binders and folders were the originals,
Oh.
in some cases, the negatives themselves. And I mean, when you look at the quality, there's three different files to download with hundreds of photographs, some of which you'll recognize if you look into Project Blue Book material. But I would almost guarantee you've never seen the quality of some of these photographs that Rob had sent over to me. So we compiled them into a couple different sections. Some were undated, some were just kind of random dates. But then they also their organized by different dates like 1953 to 66 and 1967 to 69, that you can download those big chunks of photographs. But I would definitely recommend everybody to go in there and kind of take a look and see the quality of those photos, because, you know, we've really, from a research angle, never seen the quality like that before.
Well, it's cool stuff. And, you know, it's definitely sort of like frozen in time. I wonder if the ultimate significance of it, even lacking a smoking gun case, is that the fact that they were willing to toss this stuff out without preserving a copy of it, at least in some form.
That's right. I think you brought it up in the beginning of the interview, too. It's what else could they have possibly thrown out or shredded, or, you know, what we lost. Lieutenant Murano was probably only able to get so much for a souvenir, you know, when he took this stuff. But we don't know where all that other material is and how much has been lost or shredded over the years. And going a little bit broader from just the UFO and Project Blue Book stuff, I've uncovered that in countless occasions, and somebody who loves history makes me cringe every time I uncover it, where the government will admit, oh, we shredded that. You know, nope, sorry, we don't have anything. We destroyed it. The FBI has a lot of those examples. I mean, I have a huge FBI file collection on all sorts of people. And I can't tell you how many times where you go after a document on somebody, and the response is, nope, sorry, you know, we shredded those documents. I will give a quick example, but it fits into all this. I went after the FBI files of every alleged member of MJ-12. And I will tell you that not only did they all have files of some kind, but the quite a few of them had their files destroyed. And so I've kind of notated that in a big page where I've kind of listed every member of MJ-12. And either linked to their actual FBI file or notated where they were destroyed. But it does make me cringe, because that happens a lot. Even another incident where they destroyed it was the very famous UFO Japan Airlines Flight 1628 incident.
Oh, man, that's a big one.
Back in 1986. And the quick backstory is I filed a FOIA request to the FAA for information on this. They claim they sent me a letter that I did not respond to, wherein they said, if you withdraw your FOIA request, and I'm telling you, I have never experienced this before. They said, if you withdraw your FOIA request, we will give you the information outside the channels of the FOIA. If you keep the FOIA request, it's going to create, I don't know, delays, or I forget exactly what they said. But in essence, they were trying to get me to retract the FOIA request. And after a certain amount of time, I thought, well, this is weird. Why didn't I get a response yet? I asked for an update. And they said, well, you didn't give us an answer to our letter. And as indicated on our letter, if we don't hear from you for 30 days, we're destroying all the documents. And that's what they did. They destroyed everything against on 1628. There was no reason for them to do that. And you had brought up how many FOIA requests I've done before the break. To quickly answer that, it's over 8,000. And out of over 8,000 FOIA requests to nearly every government agency you can imagine, never have I run into something like that. I never received that original letter and or opened it in time. And after the 30 days, they destroyed those documents and they're lost for good. So why they did that, I'm not real sure. But they did, and that was just another incident where they've destroyed these things. So sadly, you know, when we're trying to get to the root of what's going on, whether it be Project Blue Book or, you know, Japan Airlines 1628 or ATIP, we just don't know at the end of the day how much they're destroying. And it is documented that they've done it in the past, and sadly they'll do it again in the future, where they're hiding this evidence and we're not going to be able to get it.
By the way, if you get my FBI file, can you let me know?
Well, I need your permission, but I'll be more than happy to go after it for you.
All right. Let's take a couple of calls. Try west of the Rockies, Fran in Modesto. Hey, Fran.
Good morning. Yes, I'm very happy to speak to you. I was in the Marine Corps back in Camp Lejeune, North Carolina. And yes, FBOs are true. I worked teletype back there. And I black out mentally, but not physically. And military will not even try and help. My husband was stationed at Castle Air Force Base in the 60s, and they've stated there was nothing like that happening. So some kind of research needs to be done on this also. But others that were stationed in the 50s back at Camp Lejeune, I'm sure a lot of them would know about it, especially if they worked any type of teletype.
Well, you think they did something to your mind, your brain? You're blacking out?
All I remember, truthfully, is one day I got to see a psychiatrist. I'm supposed to have gone into the cafeteria with my shoes on the wrong feet, my clothes on backwards. I don't remember a bit of it. So a person with this kind of illness blacks out mentally, but not physically. I've been trying to prove this to doctors, psychologists for years, and no one believes it. So there is something with it.
Well, Fran, I appreciate you calling in. I'm not sure that's a question for John, but if anybody else has had that experience, I hope they'll call in and we'll let you know. Thanks for the call. On the wild card line, Jeff in Santa Rosa, California. Hey, Jeff, you're on with John Greenwald.
Hey, how you doing? How you guys doing? Good to talk to you again, Mr. Knapp. I wanted to just pass on some information about what I've found out about why this big old cover-up is going on with all the UFOs. I saw a bunch of UFOs over here in Santa Rosa. As a matter of fact, there was one the night of the fire on October 9th at 1:20 a.m. And I did file a Sonoma County Sheriff's report with them, along with the other one that I've been trying to get out on the radio, but I don't want to get cut off, so I'm not going to talk about that. But the information that I saw on the UFO a couple of years ago, I talked to the Inspector General at the Department of Defense in Washington, D.C., and they referred me to two places. One was the Secretary of the Air Force, the Inspector General's office, the Secretary of the Inspector General's office, Chief Master Sergeant Rivas. And she informed me that they still have UFO reporting forms that they pass out. They told me at the IG at DOD that I probably wouldn't get too far with her, but she offered to send me a form for the UFO that I saw. It was one of the UFOs that I saw. And I told her no, because I'd already filed a report with Edwards at OSI. And OSI informed me that they do disk recovery operations there. And having dealt with the Air Force and the different aspects of the military and the FBI not admitting that they do anything with directed energy weapons and things like that, I found that the Air Force has informed me already that they will neither confirm nor deny the existence of two things. One is UFOs of any type, whether they're domestic or ET, or any kind of ET civilization in this solar system. And
hey, Jeff, I'm gonna ask you to kind of zero in on a question for my guest, John Greenwald.
All right, Mr. Greenwald. Well, actually, this was just a comment to let you know that this kind of stuff is still going on. They just don't want to admit that there's an ET civilization out here on the moon, on Mars, or any of these other places where people can, their secret space program goes up and collects this stuff.
Well, thank you for the call. Appreciate the comments. John, I don't know if you had any experience with the folks he was talking about.
I've dealt with those offices quite a bit. I mean, I've never heard of a response like that to anybody. They have when it comes to the military and the government responding to UFOs, it's no surprise that they forwarded him to the Air Force, right? That most agencies will do that. And then the company line, what I call it, and again, this is pre-December of 2017 with ATIP, they would, in essence, give you all the information on Project Blue Book, but they would also say in the same letter that they've never had an interest in UFOs since then. So the fact that Edwards talked about a disk recovery team and stuff like that, I've never heard that at all.
What about the idea of Jeff had mentioned reporting forms that they had reporting
that's,
forms?
Yeah, that's another one that I haven't heard, because generally in the manuals that do exist, other than the one that I talked about with 10-206, the general public, not military, but the general public, if they were to call in, whether it be to the FAA or the DOD, they were giving out in different manuals, and I actually have a page on the blackvault.com with UFO reporting procedures, that they would actually forward them to either the National UFO Reporting Center, which is listed in some of these manuals and documents, And then over the course of a couple years, so was Bigelow Aerospace and Bass. And now that totally makes sense with the identification of ATIP, because it did actually fall off, and I'm going to be publishing it this week. It did fall off from some of the manuals in around the 2012 era, meaning once ATIP, as we were told, is canceled. I know Mr. Elizondo said it continued with different funding, but documentation actually shows that around 2012, Bass and Bigelow Aerospace dropped off of what the government was recommending where you send your UFO report, which I kind of thought was very interesting because, again, it did coincide with ATIP coming up. Then they put Bigelow Aerospace and Bass inside the documents. And then around 2012, when they updated the manual again, they fell off, and the National UFO Reporting Center remained. So it was kind of an interesting look, because now it all makes sense on why they wanted the general public to start pushing their UFO reports to Bigelow Aerospace, because it's involved with the ATIP program.
Yeah, it's sort of a signpost. In retrospect, you can sort of see how it makes sense. Bob Bigelow, about 3 weeks after he signed the contract in 2008, came on this program and sort of announced he was in the UFO business and collecting information. And then he had a partner in that information in that program. He just didn't say who the partner was. And it does make sense now in retrospect. Try to get one more call in before the break. Frank in Hollywood, Maryland. Hey, Frank.
Howdy, George. Glad to be back with you. My question concerns the missile silos. If some entity, alien entity, were to cut them off, either here or in Russia, what would be the purpose of cutting them off if we could cut them right back on, or was there damage to it? And how long did it take to get back online? And then if they're supposed to be demonic, why would demons care if we blew ourselves up or not?
Frank, we'll ask John. John, you've seen those documents, of course.
Yeah.
Well
documented that there are UFO cases that have interfered with nuclear missile silos and the operations there. It was not, according to the documents, as easy as just flipping a switch to turn them back on, that there were cases where they would go minutes of being offline. Nobody could figure out why or how or what, but then essentially they would get things back on. With the demonic part of it, I know that there's a lot of talk about that in parts of the UFO community that are trying to tie in demonic forces and stuff like that. That's not something that I look into, but I'm a document guy, and I will support that. Yeah, there are cases where UFOs have affected those missile silos, but again, at the end of the day, it's not as easy as just it was a light switch flipped off, so we just flip it back on. It seemed to be a very complicated way of how these UFOs were able to essentially turn off these silos and get them offline, and it took a little while for our military personnel to bring them back online.
Yeah, we don't know what the intention was. It could be something as simple as, hey, let's see if I can turn these off in case we need to stop us from blowing ourselves up at some point. We're talking with John Greenwald of theblackvault.com about his cache of UFO and other national security-related documents. We'll take more of your phone calls after this on Coast to Coast AM. We're talking with John Greenwald of the Black Vault, blackvault.com, an amazing collection of material squeezed out of the government through the use of FOIA, including a lot of photos, other UFO cases unrelated to Project Blue Book. Pretty cool stuff if you have not checked it out. We'll come back with our final segment and take more of your calls, questions, and comments here on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back. Hey, John, how many FOIA requests outstanding do you have at any given time?
Oh, probably a couple hundred. I don't have an exact number of outstanding, but I know it's at least 200 that are out, 250 that are out currently that are still open. But at any random time, it could be even higher, depending upon how many I've filed. But I deal with, not just UFO-related material. I mean, I pretty much will tackle any government secret with every government agency you can ever imagine.
Have you ever asked Secret Service about UFOs?
Yeah, that was one that yielded no records on them. There's been a couple that have actually come up with UFO documents that were kind of a surprise to me, even recently, about a year and a half ago. I received a batch of UFO documents from the National Forest Service. So I was rather intrigued and surprised that they actually gave me a stack of UFO material, even a UFO sighting, which I'm not sure if it was a National Forest Service employee or possibly a visitor to the one of the national forests, but they submitted a picture where they were taking a, you know, one of the scenic tourist photos where they were just posing in front of a beautiful view. But in the background of their photograph was kind of a, you know, a flying saucer that we've commonly heard about. And so they submitted that to the National Forest Service. And it was interesting that the Forest Service, you know, takes that kind of stuff seriously. They took the report and filed it. Another agency that, to my surprise, had some documents was the NRC, or the Nuclear Regulatory Commission.
I think we just lost John there. I think he was referencing the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, which it makes sense. If you think about the UFO files, a lot of cases have come up over the years. UFOs appearing over nuclear facilities, not only weapons facilities, but also power plants. I'll try to go back to our callers. I'm not sure if we're going to get John on immediately, but Teresa in Washington, are you there, Teresa?
I am. Hi, George. Thanks for taking my call. I'm a huge fan of both you and Mr. Greenwald. I wanted to ask him about if he has any information about actual space aliens. We hear a lot about UFOs, and I have no doubt they exist in one way or another. But does anybody have anything about actual space aliens? And I'll hang up for the answer.
Thanks, Teresa. So, John, do you have any documents that reference alien beings in these files?
No. I mean, there was a Project Blue Book one that was kind of interesting that was ended up being a hoax of a alien being that was found, and in fact, Rob had discovered one of the photographs was of this. It was again a hoax, but it was touted to be a space alien. You know, like your caller just asked about. But on an official channel, no. I mean, really, the only thing you're going to find about alien life is going to be from NASA and, in essence, a microbial life, or, you know, life on another planet, but on a cellular level. That's really the only time you're going to see any reference to alien life. Whenever you see, you know, references to alien life, like your caller just asked about, it's going to be in the MJ-12 documents, the leaked information that, yeah, in my opinion, is largely hoaxed. I don't want to say it's all hoaxed, but this day and age, it's so hard, you know, to keep all that stuff straight. And sadly, on an official level, there's never been anything in relation to intelligent beings on another planet.
I remember seeing some speculation on it in an Air Force manual from the Air Force Academy that they were using to teach cadets, in which they discussed it. I don't know if that's something that's acquired through FOIA, but I've got a copy of it from somewhere. Does that ring a bell with you?
You know, very vaguely, but I don't think so. I'm thinking of the firefighter's manual, though. I think
it's
what I'm thinking about, not the Air Force cadet. But I do kind of recall in the back of my mind there's something like that. I just don't remember exactly where it was.
You can't remember all 1.5 million documents that you've got?
You know, I'm up to 1.8 now, if you can believe it. Yeah, I'm approaching the 2 million mark. I try and keep them all straight, but sometimes I'm going to blame the flu this evening. I'm not getting that one straight.
We'll try a first-time caller, Brett, in Vancouver. Hey, Brett, you're on with John.
Hey, thanks a lot. Yeah, I just kind of want to chronologically kind of discuss some things that I filmed, and I haven't filmed, and I have it dated, incredible things. One of my questions is there a possibility that there is an electronic type of a magnetic force that is protecting our skies so we don't see the UFOs? And I want to begin, it started the first time I ever saw a UFO, it was on May 29th, 2016, at 1:32 in the afternoon. I was in my garage, and I literally walked out of the garage, and I look up, and I'm not making this up. I have a flying saucer over my head. I turn on my phone, my Samsung 3, and I filmed it, and I'm walking backwards. The birds, insects, everything is going crazy. And I walk backwards, and I'm trying to find somebody, and I find my neighbor. She comes out. I filmed the whole thing. Okay, so I want to kind of talk about that. I'm not good at speaking in public. But, yeah, so I filmed that one. That was on May 29th. And so then you can go to my YouTube. I have it all filmed there. There I have other UFOs I filmed right in the area. But it's all chronological. You can see it on my YouTube.
Do you have a question for John?
Yeah, is there a possibility that there's some type of a defense, electromagnetic defense system that is in the skies that moves faster than you can see them in the skies, and maybe they move back and forth or they move side to side? That's the question.
Well, when we start dealing with alien technology and operating off the assumption that UFOs are extraterrestrial connected and so on, anything is possible. I'll say that. I am a nuts and bolts document kind of guy. So I come from the standpoint that if I don't get it officially from the government, I'm going to question it. When it comes to alien technology, I'm fascinated by that. I've got to produce a lot of television where we've done speculation. One of which was if aliens had a evil intention or an aggressive intention towards the people of Earth, why would they come here and how would they destroy the planet? I just did that show for History Channel about a year and a half ago. And so I love speculation like that. But on an official level, I'm going to say no, but that's just a personal opinion. This is a whole different show in itself.
Yeah.
But I believe that intelligent life is out there. I believe that there's a huge possibility it could be here. I think one of the biggest questions for me, if they could get here, is would they even care to come here? And again, that's a different show in itself. But I think that, you know, these defensive mechanisms of shielding their identities towards the people of Earth so they can fly in our skies or whatever it might be, I just don't think that it matters to them. You know, I mean, we're not going to Mars with the intention to hide our existence. We're plopping these rovers down wherever we can, and it doesn't matter, you know. And I think that the same would be true to intelligent life out there. And then again, there's that bigger question of would they even care to be here and speak with us or announce their existence? They may just see, oh, this planet's inhabited, let's move on. And that's it, and not care to contact us. So, you know, not to repeat myself, but that's a different show in itself. I just don't see the need for such technology to shield their existence.
You know, John, as we have talked before, I got started on the UFO topic and hooked on it for the same same pursuit that you're involved in, is the paper trail. As a reporter, I can't go out and find UFOs at will, but I could follow the paper trail. And the documents that have been produced pre-FOIA are really interesting because, you know, they were internal documents, and the people who were typing them up never expected people like us to get a look at them. And they were very frank.
Yeah, and you see that even outside of the UFO topic with the government, where pre-FOIA, they never thought that these documents would see the light of day. And that gentleman from the Air Force, for example, on the Project Blue Book stuff, writing about these jerks from the under 30 generation, he never thought that that would see the light of day when he wrote that and then submitted his report. And yet these things, you know, then become in the channels of FOIA, and then you get them years later that they were written, decades later than they were written. So it is a fascinating topic to really tackle. And the pursuit of some of these documents, UFO related and not, is very challenging, but it's so much fun for me because you find out what's really there, but you also find out what you can't touch. And that to me is what drives my curiosity, because there are stories that I could talk about for hours and hours, one of which I'll just tell you that the National Security Agency, they have hundreds of UFO documents that they have released in the past that are mostly blacked out top to bottom. And I requested a review of those things to get some of those blacked out markings lifted, called a mandatory declassification review. They claim, and I just got this about a week ago for a second attempt, They claim they cannot find a single one of the original UFO documents. In essence, they blacked everything out and trashed the originals. And so now all of that history is lost. So that challenge is really showing me that there is something to this topic and that there is a lot more than they want us to know. I've also discovered classified material going back to World War I that still, here in 2018, they won't release. World War I still has classified information that they won't release about. And so you look at those types of facts and you realize there's just a lot there that the military and the government wants to hide, not only on UFOs, you know, not only about the existence of, you know, aliens if they are out there, but just about everything. They have something to hide. So that really drives me to keep pushing for answers, and it's all part of the bigger puzzle of getting these little shreds of evidence to see what exactly they're hiding.
We'll go to Wally in Hattiesburg. Hi, Wally.
Hi. Yeah, I've got a question about the Bentwaters incident, which is a famous UFO event that happened in 1981, I believe it was, 81 in Britain. I was stationed about that time at RAF Lakenheath, and I remember during this time we were on alert almost for the entire year, which is not unusual. We would play war games a few times each year, but at that time it was only a British alert on our side of the country and not other parts of NATO. And I never could figure out why we were constantly on alert for that whole year. And then later, you know, later on I heard about the Bentwaters event. Has there been any more information about that been released?
There are some official documents that you can find. If you want to, you know, write me directly online on theblackvault.com, any of the contact forms will come to me, and I'll point you to some right directions because it's a little bit long to give the addresses over the air here. But I'll be more than happy to send you some links. There's the official documents to support what happened over there, and then there's a lot of controversy from some of the people that were involved that have come out with books and have done public lectures and so on. So there's a lot of conflicting information too. So, you know, it'll be a challenge for you to really kind of sift through and see exactly what is real and what is not. But there are some official documents about those incidents that happened over there that I can point you to.
Thanks, Wally. And John, in general, it's hard to keep up with that case and with the UK's UFO files. It seems like every year or so, their government announces, their Ministry of Defense, okay, we just released our last batch of UFO files, and then they find another one.
Yeah, it is hard to keep up with it. I mean, there's a lot of information out there from the UK that has come out, and albeit it's very interesting, you know, a lot of times with UFO cases from other countries, I do lean towards, you know, when the government here in America is testing their toys, a lot of times you can't keep them in the airspace above Area 51 or, you know, above Nellis or wherever, that you might fly these things over international countries, and that, I'm not going to say accounts for everything, but it's hard for me to start getting into other country UFO reports, because then you have no idea what type of Earth-based technology is being tested over there from another country that they may not know what it is, and to them it is alien, but in reality it's just a very top secret, a very highly advanced piece of equipment that we might be testing. So I'm not saying that accounts for everything. I'm just saying that other countries, when they start flooding the waves with UFO documents, it does get challenging to keep everything straight on what it might be and what it might not be.
I'm trying to remember from your site whether you post any documents from other countries, their UFO files.
I do, yeah. There's a little bit of a copyright issue there, if you could believe it. The United Kingdom actually copyrights all their material to the Crown. So contrary to what America does, where everything belongs to you and I and the taxpayer and it's public domain, other countries are a little bit different. So I kind of tread carefully there. I do have, though, a big batch of the UK documents. And if the Crown, if the Queen ever calls me and says, hey, those are copyrighted to me, please take them down, I will, of course, oblige. But, you know, it's reference material, and I would hope that they would see the value. And no one's ever bugged me about it, but I do kind of tread a little carefully there.
We'll try to get one more call in. East of the Rockies, Joe in Long Island. Hey, Joe, we got a short amount of time.
Yeah, has there been inspections of landing sites, or anything along those lines where, there's speculation it might be some identified flying object that landed somewhere and left material or some sort of imprint?
Yeah, one of which is in the very collection that we have been talking about with Project Blue Book, and that's the Socorro, New Mexico landing. And this was a very interesting case, but the short of it was a police officer in New Mexico that saw a flying object come land in a field, and their investigation showed that there were impressions in the ground. They took soil samples, and this was the very case. We haven't talked about them in the last 2 hours, but this was the very case that turned Dr. J. Allen Hynek into being more of a believer from starting as a skeptic. And he went out and investigated this himself, and they call these trace evidence cases. So there are cases out there, and again, if you look at this batch of Blue Book documents, look for the Socorro documents, because there was information in this material about Socorro, including as far as I know, this has never been seen before, a film reel of Hector Quintanilla talking about the Socorro landing. And this was a film reel that, again, UFO investigator Rob Mercer had digitized, and we've got that in the collection also. But this is Quintanilla himself talking about Socorro, and this press conference I've never seen before.
Awesome. Well, I'll have to check that out. John's always great to have you on the program, and I get lost on your site every time I visit it.
My pleasure. No, and feel free to get lost anytime.
All right. Thank you. I didn't mean that in a negative way. I mean it in a good way, and that I can't pull myself away from it. But thank you for being here. Thanks also to my earlier guest, Lou Elizondo, and to my colleagues there at Coast to Coast, Nathan Staten, Donna Walker, our webmaster tonight, Greg Bishop, Dan Galani, and producer Chris Boros. I'm George Knapp. I'll be back in a couple of weeks. Good night.